Welcome to the Brew Drink Run podcast, brought to you by the only website that promotes brewing your own beer, consuming the best craft beers in the world, and then running off the calories, brewdrinkrun.com.
Welcome to episode number 195 of Brew Drink Run After Dark. I'm your super sexy host, Lee. With me, as always, is my loyal right-hand man, Keith.
Hey.
And from the beginning noise that you probably heard over that intro, Andrew's here, everybody.
Hey,
Andrew.
How are y'all?
Yeah, we're excited to have Andrew back with us. We want to remind everybody to join us on March 3rd at Service Brewing Company in Savannah, Georgia for BDR 200. We'll be recording our 200th episode and sampling our collaboration beer with Service. Check our Facebook page for the exact time and more information as the date comes up. If you like the show, please rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you grab your podcasts and write a short review. Your ratings and reviews help more people to find the show. Or you can tell a friend by posting about the show on Facebook or Twitter. If you do that, be sure to tag us at Brew Drink Run. This week, we're talking about running for sure. We are talking about brewing for sure, sort of. And we're going to drink a beer. We do start off with one of those. Keith, what is it this week?
We have Service Brewing Company's Brewer's Release Number 1. This is a Belgian-style quad brewed with Mission figs, raisins, dates, and fennel seeds. And it comes in at a nice 9.3% ABV on the lower end of the acceptable range, but it'll get the job done.
That sounds really pretentious. Anything with fennel seed in it, I kind of have a problem with. So I'm going to start off behind the eight ball on this one. This sounds like fancy Brooklyn beer. We'll see about that. This is the first wide release of one of your taproom batches that has become this kind of special, they're calling it the Brewer's Release.
Yeah, series. We're just trying to basically find a way to utilize the canning system that we have and the ability to use blank cans and do different kinds of art on them. And having recently installed some 10 barrel fermenters and tanks, we can do some really small, more limited runs. This one, we ended up doing 60 barrels of this beer, put a lot of it into oak and Buffalo Trace whiskey barrels, canned most of it, and then there's a few handful of kegs around. So this is the first in this series. Hopefully there'll be a Brewer's Release number, 2 and 3 and 4 along the way, different types of beer. Artwork is going to be essentially the same, except take the different colors in and out and just change the wordage. So if we do an IPA, it'll say IPA and what makes it special or different or unique or not. That's kind of the idea, is to get some of these smaller batch beers that we do out into a little bit larger segment to the public.
Yeah, so if you do see this on store shelves, it does have a different look than the rest of Service's line. Andrew, Raymond's not here. He's our art guy. But can you kind of run down the design of these cans for us, what people should look for?
Yeah, so I'd say it's 80% solid white where the words are, and then it's got a band at the bottom that in this case is fig, raisin-y, date-colored.
Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm.
It's not purple, it's not brown, it's brown. So... Mm-hmm. I think that's a word Raymond would use anyway.
Yeah, he'd probably use magenta or something.
Yeah,
like that. I'm not even sure what color that is, but
I like brown.
Yes, what I do like about it is the boldness of the plain boldness of the wording, and then on top here it says small batch Brewer's Release number 1, but then in true military form there's an acronym there, the SBBR Quad 01. So that way, if you're talking with your military friends, you can shorten it up and you don't have to say all those words.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, it does have that kind of military surplus, kind of bare bones aesthetic that I think, that undesigned kind of thing that I think is, it probably does hearken to those military roots there at service. It makes a lot of sense for something like this. We're going to have iterations. You don't want to have all that manpower invested in something completely different every time. You want something that's going to be flexible and be able to adapt. And for people who are searching for these more rare, limited edition beers, you know, it's going to stand out and be that sort of thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It reminds me a little bit, just that general aesthetic of like your emergency drinking beers. It's really plain, really forward, presents it. Obviously, there's more going on here, more information, more detail about the beer, and it blends in with Service's branding really well. We have poured this into not really appropriate glassware, but we have split this up into, what would you call these? These aren't really old-fashioned glasses, but kind
juice of... Tumblers? Juice
yeah,
tumblers?
Yeah, this is a juice tumbler.
All right, that sounds great. for a little bit of this grape juice, and... For it's a little bit more brown than grape juice for sure. Keith, how would you describe the look of this beer in the glass?
I think it comes out. It's a little bit on the cloudy, hazy end. I'm not sure if I got the last of one of these cans.
Yeah, you got the last of.
Okay, so that probably explains that. But it's to me, it's kind of a nice, kind of dark, kind of maroon, reddish color. There's little hints of kind of caramel, golden amber coming in just at the bottom of my glass, or where the light can kind of come through along the edges. Poured with a kind of quickly created kind of fizzy head, which has sort of dissipated down to not much of anything. You know, I always like to have a nice, you know, kind of full, thick, creamy head. But honestly, for a Belgian-style beer, I don't think that's too inappropriate for that to happen. And that's really, really what we got here.
Yeah, it looks good. The aroma on this beer is really nice as well. It's what you'd expect from a quad, which is great. Right.
which is kind of what we were going for with the beer in general, which is not the fennel seed was a little bit of an additional kind of sidetrack. Actually, this is beer was an idea I came up with, and of course Austin came up with the recipe. But I wanted to accentuate the kind of natural flavors you would find in a quad. Yep. But I thought the fennel seed would just go really well with that kind of little hint of almost black licorice, but not a whole lot, just a little tinge of that. So I think that the dark fruit flavors or aromas are really coming out in this beer quite a bit, and there's just that little hint of the fennel seed on the nose.
Yeah, it's the with the Belgian yeast that you're using here, I'm sure it's going to be accenting the fruits that are involved, but then also there's that little bit of bubblegummy too.
Yeah, a little bit of that. I've been hearing that from people as well, and I think that that kind of general Belgian bubblegum sweetness is coming out in this. I also get just a little hint of the alcohol on the nose as well, just that little bit of burn. It's not huge, but you can tell this is going to be a big beer.
Go ahead and take your sips if you haven't already, gentlemen. There's a lot of really nice stuff going on here. I mean, I think that with everything leading up to it, you're getting kind of the fruition of what you're smelling, what you're looking at. It really does complete the experience nicely. With that, the fennel seed. I mean, I think that is it does make this very different. There's a little bit of a pepper in it as well, mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. the flavor in the beer on the finish. But you are getting that deep, dark fruit, relatively middle body. It's not thick. It's not mm-hmm. chuggy. It drinks really well. And then you've got some of these lighter notes that are coming through, too. I feel like it's a really nice, round, kind of complex experience.
Well, thanks. I've had this a bunch of times, so I'm more interested to hear what you guys have to say.
Yeah. I like how the carbonation works with it, too. Yep. It looks like it's going to be flatter than it is, mm-hmm. But the amount of carbonation, I feel like, is just right for this. It moves it around just enough. I think that if this was more still, it would just be less... It would have less of some of these elements that I'm liking.
Yeah, and Belgian, at least from my experience, I mean, a lot of Belgian beers are very highly carbonated. I mean, they go... You know, we shoot, I think, for our typical beers before packaging, like 2.5 volumes. Mm-hmm. I know some breweries go up to 2, 6, 7, 8, somewhere in there. I mean, I know there are some Belgian style beers that, you know, you look those up, they're up in like 4, you know, over just over four, like right from the get go. And I mean, that's where some of those beers that you pour that, you know, come from Belgium, and there's like big, huge heads coming out of them. So I did bump this one up just a little bit. I can't remember exactly where we were. Might have been somewhere around 2.7 on canning day, and you lose some of that during canning.
Right.
So hopefully it settled down to not too much below 2.5 parts.
Well, the carbonation for me carries a lot of the alcohol flavor through. Like, it's not so. Instead of it being really sharp and hot.
Mm-hmm.
The carbonation kind of softens that perfectly. Mm-hmm. So I like that a lot, part of that. I mean, he took my comment.
Oh, God, I'm so sorry.
Whatever.
Yeah, so this is really nice, and I'm looking forward to having more of these. I mean, as always, you can be on the forefront of this by going to the Service Brewing Tap Room.
Yep.
By going out and seeing that there's new stuff there all the time, stuff that sometimes will only be brewed once. You know, definitely some first passes on things or some working out of some new ideas. And even if you're not in Savannah, wherever you are, chances are these days you probably have a brewery close by.
Right.
And a lot of breweries are doing this. They'll have a small system where they will test out batches, come up with new ideas, get creative, do special collaborations with people in town, you know, restaurants.
Yeah, I mean, it's we're doing that. I think every brewery is kind of doing that. Of course, if you live in Savannah or you're visiting Savannah, you can pick up... at this point, most of what we have on tap and crowlers, we're doing that if we don't actually package the beer. And even if we do, for some reason you prefer a crowler of Compass Rose IPA, go for it. You know, we'll do that for you. But since we've utilized this kind of larger R&D program where we get, you know, somewhere between, you know, six and nine barrels of beer to package, we're going ahead and just releasing those things. So rather than sort of hoarding them back in the tap room, we're like, if you want to take it to go, great, we'll sell it to you. And then, you know, we did like 340 cases of this beer, so there's a good bit of it's going to find its way up into the throughout the state, up into the Atlanta market. And I don't think our South Carolina, North Carolina distributor has picked up any yet, but if you're in those markets, there's probably a much more limited run, but you should be able to find it. So start asking around about it now if you're a fan of what we do. Maybe you'll get your local store to pick it up for you.
And if you're not a fan, get on it.
So yeah, you guys did not. This is a full release though, even though it's like,
yeah, I think this is something we're just starting. We're gonna have to see how things pan out. I mean, if you're talking, you know, if we do, you know, not 9 to 10 barrels of beer, and then, you know, after, you know, the normal amount of loss that you get from transferring and on package days, you know, you're talking, if we can, an entire 10 barrels, you know, you're not talking about a ton of beer to package. You know, you're looking at maybe 100 cases or so.
Sure.
They're going to be, when we decide to do these, more than likely smaller runs. There's certainly a possibility that we'll do another 60 barrels of something later on down the road.
Depending on what you see on.
Yeah, this was one where knowing we were going to, when we're able to get barrels in and knowing we're going to barrel some of it,
right.
We just decided to go ahead and make this one the first release and kind of make the first one a little bit bigger. So I think the distribution is going to be a lot smaller going forward. I'm not sure if a lot, I mean, I'm not sure how much of it's going to make its way out of the Savannah area. That really remains to be seen.
Okay.
And, you know, and some of that is not, I mean, we can dictate to some extent what we want, but, you know, once the distributor has the beer, if they can sell it all, they're going to sell it all as quickly as possible. That's really what they're in the business of doing. So, although we can, you know, say we really want 30 cases to go up to Atlanta or something like that, it doesn't always happen quite that way. So it's you know, all work in progress. We're learning as we go on this. So we're looking forward to a chance to package something up and do another one. Maybe an IPA of some kind in the next quarter would be fun. So
cool.
You speak so eloquently on it, Keith. I could just listen to your dulcet tones talk about brewing
about service
and
brewing all day long. However, we have other things to discuss.
And we will discuss those other things, including more about brewing. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. We'll mix up our format a little bit today. We've gotten some listener feedback. Nobody reads because we don't write anymore. We've gotten some listener feedback. Cassie Ward over on Instagram. I bought a 4-pack of Backwoods Bastard after hearing us talk about show a couple of weeks ago.
Good beer.
And said, bought a 4-pack of this one because of Brew Drink Run. Seriously, not disappointed. So glad. And you should not be.
That's one of my, that is one of my all-time favorite beers. You all must have drank that one without me when I was unable to be on the podcast.
And we were really surprised we had not had it on the podcast before.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
So that was a big mind blower for both of us when we were looking down at what we're going to have. And we also got an email from Mike J. Keith was able to help him out. He emailed in with a question saying loves the show. Started listening to your podcast about a year ago. I've since gone back and listened to most of the previous episodes. Yikes. Yeah. I have about 30 more to be caught up. Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah.
I am an avid craft beer drinker, brewer, and occasional runner. I have a 4-keg system that I try to keep full with homebrew. Last year, I ran a half marathon and have been struggling to get back into it. I hear your pain. You guys make my 45-minute commute to work more entertaining. Awesome. Next month, my family will be heading down to Florida to visit my mother-in-law. I've convinced my wife that it would make my trip more enjoyable if we could stop at the mini breweries from Tampa Airport to Lady Lake. Knowing Keith has family in the Tampa area, looking for recommendations of where to stop. Of course, Cigar City was on his list. And my wife got me a BDR tea for Christmas, which is soft and comfortable. Gosh, thanks, Mike.
That's where that one shirt went.
Yeah. Seriously. In the interest of time, Keith went ahead and wrote him back, gave a nice little roundup of what he's enjoying about Tampa today, right now. You know, the scenes are always changing and things are always going on. I thought, hey, we might as well share some of those suggestions with our listeners on the podcast, too. Maybe other folks have a trip to Tampa coming up. And you were kind enough to do, like, 5 points. You had 5 places to go. And I think you ranked them in order of your... which one you would go to first to last.
Yeah, maybe. I kind of based it on overall quality and just tap room experience, and tried to mix in some oldies but goodies and some new things. And that's, you know, there's a lot of breweries and you can more than you can handle probably. But I figured if you're in Tampa specific, like you're not going to St. Petersburg, Clearwater, you're not spending a week there to be able to hit everything. These were the 5 that I think are really worth going to if you're there.
Your number one was Angry Chair.
Correct.
Yeah, what can you tell people about Angry Chair?
They're great. Offshoot from Cigar City, much smaller than Cigar City's become, and literally some of the absolute best beers I've ever had have come out of there. Like beers that I've sat down and went, oh my God, this is delicious. They do a nice mix of kind of big sugary dessert stouts, sours. So you can get like a nice little tart fruity Berliner if that's your thing. And then you can get an IPA. You can get a big sugary stout or barley wine. Excellent. And if this is your kind of thing that you like, it's a small place and it's usually fairly crowded, and it seems like a good bit of the bar staff has that kind of lovingly angry quality about it, that kind of just little bit of surliness to them. I don't know if it's required, but me and my wife were highly entertained by the bartenders, and once they realized that we were being entertained, we kind of were accepted into the group, you know, so to speak. But all not done, not really done disrespectfully, but it's almost like for at least these couple of bartenders, it was part of their shtick, and I thought it was pretty good. So excellent. Great brewery.
Yeah. Number 2 was Cigar City. I feel like most of our listeners know a little bit of something about Cigar City. They have really just expanded again in the past couple of weeks. They had another big announcement of more markets that are coming into, which I'm sure will bring more people into what Cigar City does. Number 3 was Seventh Son.
Originally a Dunedin brewery, I'm sorry. And they expanded to a new facility in Tampa. Always solid good beer. I've never had a bad beer from these guys. Wide range of styles, really extensive large tap list, at least at their Tampa location, and well worth a visit. Like I said, I've never had a bad beer, and I think almost every brewery I've been to, you have something where you're like, wow, that's really not my thing. I mean, always solid, consistent beer, yeah, I think their new facility is definitely worth checking out.
Number 4 was one I don't think I knew, Hidden Springs.
Went to it for the first time when we were down there, had a really nice time. It's kind of small. It's a little bit tucked away in an area that I've never been to in Tampa. And and I really, really rather enjoyed what we had. Tried a couple of beers at our first stop. I was like, oh, let's check this out. We've never been there. Brought them some beer from service, which we usually do when we go down there. We'll just grab a bunch of whatever's fresh and sort of deliver beer wherever I go. It's pretty common in the industry to bring beer with you if you're from a brewery. And they were nice enough to hand me back a bottle as well. And I think the either owner, brewer, came out right before we were about to leave and chatted with us for a while. Very, very, very nice folks. Beer was really good. Definitely outside the box a little bit on a lot of things. A lot of kind of sour beers. I don't even think they had an IPA on the draft board. Wow. So I was sitting there for a while. I'm like, they don't even have an IPA right now, which is kind of crazy. The most interesting thing they did was like a creamsicle Berliner on nitro. And I didn't order it, though it did sound interesting. Yeah. And obviously, the guy was real excited about it when he was talking to me. He's like, here, try a little bit. And I was like, brilliant. I was like, it's perfect. And I'm not going to give away their secret, although he gave it away to me. But but I won't go ahead. I mean, maybe I don't want to take anything away from him. But incredibly simple additive that they put to that made it like perfect. And I was like, genius. Sometimes just not trying to be too clever and fancy will really get you the results you want. But worth checking out a little bit on the smaller scale, kind of a new brewery, but I could see good things happening.
We'll talk about that off mic. And number five was Coppertail Brewing. Coppertail's been around for a little bit.
They have. And, you know, I'd say out of all these breweries, I think that their beer is the maybe the least consistent for overall quality, although I do like a lot of the stuff that they do. I think their triple is really, really good, which is, you know, available in a six-pack year-round, and I like their IPA. We've been to that brewery once. Everything we had while we were at the brewery was really good. They had a bunch of stuff that you can't get normally, but the facility was really nice. So that was one more where, like, the experience of the brewery and sitting at the bar and enjoying some beers, it was it was really good, and I really enjoyed going there, even if out of those, and again, I mean, we're talking about what I think are the five best breweries. Yeah. Obviously, they make very good beer. I would say that, you know, out of all of those, they're probably the brewery where I've had maybe the most inconsistencies, if that makes any sense. Occasionally I pick up a beer when I'm down there, and maybe that batch doesn't taste quite as good as the one I had before, kind of thing, but beautiful facility, a great place to go, and definitely worth checking out, and lots of fun stuff on their taproom wall.
And what's crazy is that you made five really solid suggestions, and there are other places. If you have a penchant for one thing or the other, there are probably more places that you could point out for people to go.
And again, if you're going to Tampa and you're in a hotel, I mean, that day trip to St. Petersburg is a whole nother thing, and then you can go to the Clearwater Dunedin area, and that's a whole nother day of beer drinking. There are so many breweries down there right now. You can really kind of get lost in it. But those were I'm coming from, you know, an hour and a half away, and I'm going to make a day trip. So hit what those were what I thought were the best ones in Tampa.
Nice. When we're not drinking beer, when we're not brewing beer, when we're not traveling to drink beer, we are running off them calories, and we are happy to have Andrew here. Andrew is, he's going for it right now. He's looking for the number. Andrew is on day number.
We talked about this yesterday.
We did.
And today is 2161.
2161 consecutive days running. Yep. And we are with him again this year at the Kreitz Tybee Run Fest on Tybee Island, Georgia, right off the coast, right off Savannah. And this is a weekend where they have five races.
Yes.
That add up to a marathon distance over. Right. They say over 2 days, but it's really like not even like 18 hours or something, like 16. What is it? Like, when's it? Like 6 o'clock
starts
at night?
Yeah, it starts at 6 and you're done by 2 o'clock.
The next day.
So it's less than eight.
Math.
Yeah.
It's less than math. Yeah. So it's a fun weekend. You've done this
14 hours?
Yeah,
sounds like math.
Yeah,
sure. Why not?
This is what, your fifth year doing this?
Seventh
year doing this. Wow. And running the entire circuit?
Yes, all five every time.
And it's fun. We were looking earlier, I think it was last night, you were showing me you have all of your stats for the route every year because you've been using the same tracking mechanism for the last couple of years. So you're able to go back and really judge yourself on the course every year, how you're doing. And I guess before we talk about maybe the end goal, we'll kind of walk through the events and let us know how you're feeling this year about it. What was your training like for this year's marathon weekend?
So it was really more of a lack of training. I mean, I am running every day, so I do run at least a mile every day, but things have been relatively busy enough that I've really kind of only done a mile a day. If I ran more than 17 miles in a week, I was surprised. So it's very low average per week. I haven't gone more than 8 miles except once since the last time I ran here. So in a year, I've gone a half marathon, and that's it. Everything else is about 6 miles, give or take.
In previous years, when you felt like you had you trained up for this,
right.
I mean, were you training for a marathon distance? Were you training for like 18 miles? Like, what was your kind of strategy when you were looking at previous years when you were like, I'm really going to go in and go in for this like at the top of my game?
Yeah, so I would do marathon distance training, except cut out any run that's longer than 2.5 hours, and generally speaking, longer than like 2 hours, 20 minutes for me. I mean, so that's my goal. If I go 2 hours, I'll get a half marathon in on a training day, give or take. If I go 2.5, I get somewhere between 16, 17. And that was more than enough to be fully ready to run day two. Cause day two is really what you got to be prepared for. Cause you do the 10K, the half, and then the beach run, and then the 1 mile after that. So if you could do 16 miles, on a long run day and then do your typical workouts the rest of the day, you're probably fine. Like you probably need to prepare your weekly distance for a half marathon, but just kind of add to that on your long days and you'll probably be fine.
So you did not do that this year.
I did not do that. and it was miserable, yes, but not. So the first year I did it, I didn't do that and I wasn't running every day. So I was much less prepared. And that was...
And was that just kind of a fluke? You're like, I'm just going to do this?
Well, yeah, because... So it was actually less expensive to pay for all five than it was to pay for four of the five. Because that's what I wanted to do, was four of the five. Cut the half marathon out, because I knew I wasn't physically ready for it. But it was cheaper to pay for all five. There's some sort of discount. I don't know. I don't do math. But that was it. So I paid for all five, because I'm a cheapskate. And then I got done with the 10K. I was like, yeah, I feel good. Let's go ahead and do a half. And that was just a mistake. So it was quite miserable.
And you did finish. I mean, every year have finished the entire circuit, which I think that in and of itself is, I mean, that many years in a row, it's pretty grueling. I mean, some years it's blazing hot. Some years it's freezing cold.
Rain.
Rain.
That year was the worst, I think. I didn't like that one.
So you did the 5K last night. How did you feel after the 5K? Just normal? Like, just came walking
off? No, I didn't actually. Like, my legs were okay, but for whatever reason, normally my cardiovascular is always fine. I never
have an
issue.
Flat here.
Yeah, very flat. So, I mean, not like Winders, you know, the hills of
hills.
Colorado, but we've got hills in Winders. So, yeah, I'm running hills. So, usually my cardio is fine, but this year I got to mile 2.5 or whatever, and I was like, I'm a little tired, you know, and cardiovascular, but my legs were great.
What was your pace?
Just a little over seven minutes,
or something like that,
which was my slowest ever in this series.
And then you actually ended up medaling.
Yeah, I got second place.
Second place, age division.
Yeah, which is pretty great considering that's the slowest you've ever run it. I kind of feel like there are like little rewards that come for the people who stick with it.
Yeah.
You came home and immediately pounded like four beers.
Yep, I was trying to rehydrate properly. I did have a little bit of water in addition to those beers, but not nearly as much as I should have. I did have a couple cups of coffee
Like 10, 11 o'clock, you start drinking coffee.
That puts me right out. That's my sleeping pill.
It's a do not follow Andrew's training recipe.
I would be up for 2 days from that.
Right.
And then small
cups.
Well, one cup for each day.
Yeah.
So you're in a rental house. Did you sleep okay last night? Did you get a good night's rest?
Absolutely.
And then what time did you have to be up to run the 10K?
The 10K was at 7. Right. You know, I got up at 6. You got your morning routine prior to a race. And for whatever reason, I always get nervous getting there. Once I'm there, I'm fine. But I knew I didn't want to be there too early because it's cold outside.
Yeah.
So I was trying to time it where I walked up and they're like 5 minutes to start. And so that's pretty much what we did.
That worked.
Yeah, it was great.
So before the 10K, did you do any fueling? Did you have a banana? Did you do anything? Or you just go out empty stomach? And
this is probably improper, but a 10K for me, I don't concern myself with ever.
Yeah.
I just run. It's
Just knowing you had a big day in front of you. I wasn't sure if you'd. I wouldn't have done anything special either for a 10K.
But. Well, so that was something I actually forgot this year. Is normally I bring. I use Power Bars. I think that's the name of the company. Is the Power Bar Company? The chewable granola, not granola type things.
They're just a ton of calories and
That's all. Just calories, sugar, just boom, pop you through. And I'll try to eat one of those after that race. Well, I forgot all my Power Bars, so I was. Little lost, and the bananas were a little green, so I didn't have any bananas after the race either. So it was a little rough. Do the 10K, and then we're close enough here that I walked back to the house. It's a half mile, whatever. I had banana here. So the other thing I've learned is take off your wet stuff because it's cold, and so then you don't start freezing cold at the very next race. You're chattering and you're just miserable. So I take off the cold stuff, put on some new undershirts. That way just the cold wet is not right up against my skin and walk back out there for the half marathon knowing I did not have my refuel because that's part of the half is you want to have refuel at points in there just because it's miserable if you don't. I found that they were handing out the goo stuff.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. Everyone always says don't use a fuel thing that you're not supposed to use. And I typically didn't like the goo before. And this is it was a horrible flavor. It was raspberry. Not that
it's the GU brand. This was the GU name brand.
Right? Yeah. I'm not a giant fan of the raspberry flavor, but for me, I knew what it was for me. It was almost like my brain said, you need this stuff. So this is good. Don't worry about it. And so I gooed up and did some water and it was actually not terrible.
Yeah.
I think I had four of those throughout the race just to get
that. And you picked them all up at aid stations just along the way? Mm-hmm.
Which is great. I like races that do that. Not that everybody should follow that because you should have a plan for long race days like that. But if you fail miserably.
It's nice to have a backup.
Yeah, right. If your intestinal fortitude can take it down there, you don't spend too much time.
So did you have any other flavors other than raspberries today?
No, that was the weird part. It was all raspberry.
They all got free raspberry, and that was it. Yeah, like, nobody's buying raspberry this year, so here's all the raspberry.
Nobody else wants raspberry.
Maybe that was the one that they had in the warehouse they couldn't sell. So they were like, ship that out to the Kreitz. Look,
these are expiring on March or February 3rd. Got to get rid of these.
So. Yeah. So you did that. You did your half. How did you feel at the end of your half?
I want to say 5 or 6 short walk sessions, most of them when I was re-gooing up, once when I saw Keith.
Yeah, you like hung out with Keith for like 5 minutes.
Yeah, it was like a good 5-minute conversation, chilling out, whatever.
Yeah, I was like, you might want to keep moving because your legs are going to cramp up.
He's like, I'm going to see you later.
It was there.
He's like, save it for the podcast. Yeah. We're not going to have anything to talk about.
But it was nice to see him down there and just chatted for a few minutes. It was actually good because I stopped. You know, I don't like to stop, but I did, and I actually felt okay afterwards. Yeah. It's for me. It's when I do my walk. It's
You were stopping. You could tell yourself you weren't stopping because you were tired. You were stopping because I was there, and I got to talk to him. And then you're like, "Well, I did my good deed for the day, and now here I go. I'm off again."
So I did walk a bit. Slowest half marathon. Not only slowest half marathon here. Yeah. Slowest half marathon ever.
Ever.
Right. I did see Matty Pags.
Matty Pags.
Yep. So good shout out to Matt there.
Keith, you saw him too.
Yeah, I saw him run by. And
He was probably like an hour ahead of me.
Close to it.
Yes.
It wasn't a full hour.
He was top 15. Because, you know, as you're running out and you have that point of the race where it's a long stretch of you're passing the leaders, I know Matty's up front. So I'm like 1, 2, 3, 4. 5, and I'm counting the people going by.
I was trying to count the number of people that went by until he came by because I knew he'd be early, but I kind of lost count
too.
You know, after
he's looking good,
you know, you're just kind of getting up and going in the morning, and you're like, hey, what? Oh wait, how many was that? Forget it. Yeah, but it was early. I knew he was in top 20 when he went by at least. Yeah. I would have to look at the results, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was top 15.
Again, he was up there. I saw him, my count, he was somewhere between 15 and 17 each time I saw him. So
So during the race, you knew that you were slower. You weren't putting a lot of pressure on yourself. But after you crossed the finish line, were you hurting at that point? Were you thinking that like maybe I should have done some things differently?
But see, that's a good thing is I knew immediately before I started, I did this poorly. Yeah. And so my expectation was this is going to be bad.
Right.
And so knowing the expectation, I don't think... Like, before, if I was expecting to do well and I didn't, that disappointment would be added on. So, again, I knew, hey, you're not going to feel good. This is going to be bad. Who cares? Get it done. It's fine.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I did feel miserable. I came back, got some more food, some bacon, some bananas. I got a good bit of water in, and I actually laid down for 30 minutes. And it wasn't just straight laying down, because I don't want to just lay there and get stiff.
Right.
So I'm moving my legs while I'm laying down, just trying to keep the blood flowing, trying to keep from getting tight. And then walk back out for the 2.8-mile beach run. Well, they changed the route this year.
Interesting. I did not know that.
I didn't either. So I'm standing down where the start normally is, and there's nobody there. And I'm actually pointing people to go down there because I'm the dude that's done this for 7 years. I know what I'm doing. Well, no, we're not starting the same place. And so we actually started the same place we started every other race, which is out on the street.
Yeah.
And so we did a little bit more than a mile up Butler here on Tybee and then turned right over a dune, not a... what are they called? It's not a pier, but it's where it goes. The walkways
little wooden walkway to get you on the beach. Yeah.
Well, it was sand, so it was wider, so it could accommodate a couple people versus a single lane of the wood walkway going over the pier, over the sand, which was nice. So you go over the sand, you get down on the beach, and then we ran a little bit further than what we ran on Butler on the beach, and then came back on a wood walkway to get back on the street and finish. So. Yeah. They did an excellent job of trying to figure out which way the wind's going to blow somehow. And so we went to the right and then came south, and the wind was blowing enough south that, you know, even if you were walking, you were still getting pushed. And so it was...
Well, the last thing you want is sand getting blown in your face.
Trust me,
especially for you at the end of that day. What was it... So when you hit that dune, it was pretty soft, right? I mean, it was soft sand.
It was powder,
so like as soon as you hit that, what was that sensation? Did you have like... the fire in your legs or any of that at that point?
No.
Or were you just like, get through it?
Well, because I knew it was going to be terrible, and I knew I'm doing terrible. I said, Andrew, you're going to walk over the dune. And so Andrew walked over the dune. And there were people past me, and again, I knew this was going to be miserable. I prepared for it mentally. I didn't care. You know, it was good.
And then you finish it off with a mile fun run.
Yep.
How fun is a mile after you've done 25.2 of them?
So it's a mixed batch of fun. Like, you... It's an out and back type route. It's not quite out and back because you turn and turn, and so it's out one road, back another road.
Square, yeah.
Yeah. But you know when you hit that turn, every step you take, you have half of what you've done already done. So that part of it is fun. That even if you do miserable and you feel miserable of it, most people can walk a 15-minute mile. Most people that run can walk a 15-minute mile. So you mentally tell yourself, worst case scenario, I'm done in 15 minutes. Who cares? So that's the fun part of it. But yeah, it's pretty miserable.
And you stuck around for the awards afterwards.
Yep, I did.
Had a hot night last night coming in with that second place age division for your 5K. And were you thinking after the way that the weekend was going that you were gonna pull that out? No. And then what? But you hang around because that's what you do.
Right. Yeah. Well, and Nate was there, and I knew my son was gonna get his awards because he's lightning fast.
Yeah, and he placed in the mile or the beach run.
He placed in the mile. He's feeling a little miserable in the beach run too.
Yeah.
But he placed in the mile. 10 to 14 year olds. He was second place.
Yeah.
10 to 14 year old male. So it was pretty awesome for him.
His second place.
Yeah.
And then what happened with you?
I actually got second place on the mile as well.
Uh-huh. All right.
Which I don't know how, but hey, whatever, I'll take it.
Yeah.
I got second place on the 10K. We can go back to that.
Oh, I didn't realize you placed in the 10K.
I did.
Yeah.
I was shocked because for me, I set my clock on 8-ish.
Yeah.
And just like, this is an 8-minute mile. Do this. Because you have to save everything you got for the next race. Normally, I can run a sub-8 on a 10K if I'm pushing. But I said, don't push. But I still got
second.
So it's cool. But yeah, on the overall, I got first for the not exactly old man, but older man group. So I was pretty excited about
that. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
It's pretty exciting.
My slowest race by every stretch, the 5K, the 10K, the half marathon, the beach run, and the 1 mile were all my slowest in every time I've ever done these.
That's crazy.
I feel like this is a real lesson to keep with it, you guys. Because
yes. Yeah. Yes. The tortoise and the hare, right?
Yeah.
Because the tortoise just keeps going and somehow wins.
And it's just crazy because I'm sure this race keeps getting bigger. And I know that running continues to be popular. People are continuing to run longer later in life. It's not just a young man's and young woman's run anymore. People continue to be competitive for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just bonkers great. And that's awesome. You said it was honestly because other people in your age group were in the overall.
Yes, right. So
it kind of moves everybody up a little bit. But that's still a huge accomplishment.
Well, and the fact that people in my age group, I know I'm not old there because there were 70-year-olds out there, you know, septuagenarians out there running 26 miles. That's kind of cool. I hope I can say I'm that in shape at that point in my life. But to know that I'm middle-aged as far as running goes, we might be on the little older side because there's probably a lot more the 20s to 30s, and then it kind of flows out. You know, it's not exactly a bell curve. It's kind of a whale curve where it's fat in the front and thin in the back. But to know we're on the backside of that whale curve, and the winners of most of the races are in my age group, that's kind of cool that you know, old men are winning.
And it just means I need to stay out of it because it's going to be even worse for me whenever I start running races again. Final thoughts on our Brewers Release number one quad from Service Brewing. Keith and I have managed to finish ours. I feel like it sat really well.
Yeah,
like as we continue to drink on it, it's not something you need to like just chug, although I could have.
Yep.
It's nice to let it sit. It mellows really well, continues to meld and be a nice little sipper.
Thanks. Yeah.
I don't think it changed much.
Right.
To his point, the sharpness or the specificness of the other flavors.
It's temperature. Temperature increases. Yeah. Everything tends to, in almost any beer you have, sort of
balances.
Become a little less sharp around the edges and sort of rounds out a little bit.
So, I mean, if you could probably honestly serve this at, I don't want to say room temperature, but 45 to 50 instead of 30 something.
Oh, yeah.
Probably better off.
I mean, I think any kind of big beer like this, you don't necessarily, you don't want to, this is not ice cold beer here. You know, you want to, you know, you start that way. But if, you know, which kills me when people like, so these, you know, kind of untaps and beer advocates, I feel like a lot of people, they open a beer, they pour it, and then they spew their opinion and they don't kind of let the beer warm up or develop or have one and then revisit it and then take their notes or give their rating. So I think if you let any beer warm up to a proper temperature, you're gonna get a better experience.
Right.
All right, we will be right back. And we are back again. Thanks so much for sticking around. Insider tip here. We've already done this segment once, but it did not record, so we're doing it again. We're just going to pretend like that never
happened.
Let's
just get you caught up what's been going on for the past 20 minutes.
You know, I was just looking down. I was like, why is that? Why does it still say we're at 40 minutes? Like, I really feel like we've been talking for like 15, 20 minutes. I'm glad we can all laugh at this. I'm glad we have enough distance now that it's funny.
Let's get some, what is that, back masking going with the music? Ooh, maybe there's something weird in there that we don't know
about.
There's
some weird devil stuff that totally could take over the rest of this podcast. You know, it's going to be a little bit hard to recapture all this magic that we've just had. But I feel like we should at least try. And I don't feel like we should spend as long redoing it because I think we would all just kill ourselves.
Yeah.
For our grand tasting today, we are having the first and so far only Brewing Run collaboration beer, the B52. This is a beer that Andrew and I worked on back in 2014.
Yep.
And bottled on June 4th of that year. June 6th. And this is a honey wheat wine, a beer style that I like a lot. And Andrew was kind enough to volunteer his rig and his time and his expertise in helping me put one of these together. So this was obviously a cellared bottle. It's got some time on it. Andrew opened the bottle earlier on mic, and a slight little hiss came out. I'm just painting a picture for the audience of what happened.
God, I remember that. It was great.
So yeah, there's still a little bit of carbonation in here. Keith poured it. It poured this really, and some glasses more than others. I got the first pour, I guess, and so it really nice orange blossom honey color that still came through. Mm-hmm. Like you could see right through it. Keith's a little bit cloudier towards the bottom.
I got some shit in mine. Yeah, that's, like that's fine.
A worm fell out. Is this the one we put the worm in? Didn't we put a worm in one, like tequila style? You got the worm, man.
Oh, nice.
Congrats. Yeah.
Thank you.
This is a little bit more than 11% ABV. It's 11.4?
11.5.
So plenty of ABV to carry it over the last 3.5-ish years of aging. So super excited to try it, to bust it out. And has a great aroma.
Yep.
I'm just going to blow right through all this to get us back
lots
where we
honey.
Were.
Lots of honey in the aroma.
It really smelled like honey, which we all talked about was weird.
Weird because it shouldn't last, because honey's supposed to be consumed. Yep. You know, it's supposed to be just adding sugar, adding dryness. But no, it smells very strong honey.
Yeah. And tastes okay.
Yeah.
It's it's the carbonation is fading. It's on the backside, we said, of what this kind of arc would be.
A little bit of that kind of oxidation cardboard kind of thing, but not... not overly so, not to the point where it's unenjoyable.
Right.
All right, thanks for joining us.
Well, you can find us at...
Here's something I did think of while we're recapping. So we brewed this, it was April of 2014. So,
oh, right, yeah.
So that was 2 months, well, maybe a month and a half of fermentation to get to this point. So I thought,
yeah, so we're getting close to... yeah, the full...
Yeah.
The full of the 4 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was, I mean, for me, that's a long time of... fermenting. Not that it matters. I don't have money wasting in my bucket as it goes. But that's
well,
a long
I remember
time.
That at the time. You know that it was because of the ABV and it was a real bubbler. Like it really took a long time to work out. And you have a we've talked about on the show before, but your system of your fermenter, like your trash can insulated system. Why don't you explain that for homebrewers who maybe like how did you? What was the impetus for that? Where did it come from? And then why did you decide to go that route?
Well, so I knew I needed a. I wanted to make a lager, Pilsner, which is supposed to be lower colder temperature. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not room temperature, which most of them could sit at. And temperature control is one of the big things you need to worry about. So I wanted to get something colder. I couldn't afford to buy a fridge and build a box around it and make that work or anything like that. And I couldn't just crank the AC down to 52 degrees because I would be poor. So I decided to take... two trash cans, one maybe an inch and a half smaller. All
these
the
are like
around.
Maybe what, like 10 gallon, like no, commercial trash can, like the round.
The big one's like a 33.
Oh, okay.
And it might be a 25.
Okay.
So big, yeah, big, think big industrial garbage cans, plastic. And then I kind of settled them in with each other. I put a layer of spray foam at the bottom of one, let that dry, so that when I stick this second one in it. It kind of sits at the right level where the insulation on the bottom's there. And then I just kept going in circles around with the spray foam until I get to the top. And so now I have an insulated garbage can, which is essentially now a cooler that I can fit my fermenter in, whether it's a bucket or it's a carboy. I can fit that in. And so then I change ice bottles out once or twice a day, depending on the temperature. So I got a probe down in there, sticking in a water glass that's away from... everything else, that way I can kind of get a temperature of what the liquid is, because my concern is what's the temperature of the liquid.
Right.
So I have the probe down in the liquid in the water, and I'm gauging that temperature, and it'll fluctuate, which is, again, not good, but it's 2 degrees, so it's not terrible.
Well, that's not bad. That's, really that's not, yeah. That's, I mean, if you're,
yeah, because we're just garbage cans stuck together, but whatever. And the lids are, I just put the big lid on. I don't worry about the small lid because it actually kind of, in my case, it blocks the top of the blow-off tube. And then I put a blanket over top of that. Again, just trying to
keep things insulated.
Yeah. And so if I change the bottle, you know, I get up in the morning, I go for my run, I change the bottles, I put a brand new 1.5 liter ice bottle in there, take the old ones out. Actually keep a couple in there as kind of cold sinks, you know, because the more you have in there to absorb heat, the slower your ice is going to melt as well. So I maybe will have 6 ice bottles in there, and I'll change the 2 oldest out at a time. So again, it's just creating heat sink. more than anything else. And I do that twice a day. So every 12 hours, I'll change out the bottles. Right. Mm-hmm. And again, it keeps it at a pretty decent 52 to 54.
That's good.
How many times have you used that setup? How many batches?
I think three so far. I don't do a lot of Pilsners. I like them. It's so difficult because they're so unforgiving. You know, all brewers will know how unforgiving. I mean, so big beer, yeah, it is the hardest thing to brew, which is why they do things the way they do them, because that's the way you can get the most consistency out of a lager every stinking time. When you brew 50 billion gallons of it a year, you've got to be consistent. So it's very hard to brew. So that's why they do things the way they do, is that gives you more consistency. But it's tough. So I don't do it a lot. but I do use it sometimes when I know I'm going to have an active fermentation. I'll put it in there so that way it's going to catch the blow off if it happens. Mess, yeah. If the mess happens, it's not on the floor, it's not on the ceiling, it's not on the walls, it's at the garbage cans. So
has that happened yet?
Twice.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Good. Did this batch do that?
No, as active as it was, the high Krausen, I had to change the airlock three times because it was pushing Krausen out into the airlock. So I had to sanitize, pull it out, sanitize, push one in. Just so that way I have a clean airlock. Because I didn't want gook to gook up my airlock.
That's where you start getting infections and stuff.
Yeah. But as active as it was just consistently long-term bubbling versus I'm an angry fermentation. So
yeah. And how has your home brewing been going lately?
It hasn't. That's the thing that has fallen off. In addition to the proper run training, the busyness has kept the home brewing. I don't think I've brewed in, I think it's been 2 years, which is terrible for me.
I mean, I didn't realize it had been that long.
I didn't either until I think about it. I mean, it doesn't feel like it's been 2 years. Yeah. Just because you get busy enough and I'll do it next weekend. Oh, it's next weekend. Oh, I'll cut the grass now. Oh, it's next weekend. It's next weekend. And enough next weekends ends up to 2 years.
See, that's how I'm about cutting the grass. I'm like, oh, I get to cut the grass next weekend. I'll get that next weekend.
Well, for me, this is not Brew Drink Cut Grass, but if it was...
Ooh, can we do that?
New idea.
Yeah. New idea.
If
Keith
it was...
Gonna have
I was just
week.
Hoping someone would cut my grass. Oh, that's all. Okay.
That would be a... Yeah.
Yeah, we can invite people who are really into it, and they can cut our grass while we drink and talk about it.
And then they come in, the gift or the payment is getting to do the podcast.
That's
talk about Keith's yard.
Because that person
pretty good. You know, there's a little spot around
there's
the front.
There's some problems probably I can foresee, but I like the idea. The
concept
is great.
The
concept
is good.
Rock solid.
That person who's probably already listening to the podcast because it's Brew Drink Cut Grass. They're going to come to his house. That's the one other person out there listening to this. They will tell their mother, hey, mom, I'm on a podcast. Now we've got two listeners.
Yeah. And then the mom can come mow the grass next
there
week.
There it is.
And then the mom can tell the seniors.
She's still active? Yeah, sure. Why not?
Well, I got to tell you, having this is really
this is good.
Making me want to do it again. Like, you know, pushing me a little bit harder to get this happening. Did you ever figure out what that big black worm-like thing is in there?
It almost looks like pieces of wood chip or something. I don't know. It's just got to be old yeast.
I think it's just yeast cake that's just been.
Yeah, it's just. I mean, it's probably some in the bottom of there. If you want to. Oh yeah.
Oh dang.
Oh, that's nasty, isn't it?
This is a lot.
Oh, look at that.
That's chunky.
I don't even know. Oh boy. This is like a petri dish. Like this is like straight up biology type stuff here. I'm going to do it. I got to find a way to get a good picture of it to explain how nasty this looks. Let's see if I can.
Well, I'm about to finish mine, so if I die, don't drink it.
Okay, good. Abort, abort. You go ahead and do that. Oh, there's too much shadow. No, I think it'd be full. Oh, no, we'll miss you.
Did you even notice it?
Yeah, like, you know how much crap I've drunk that's come out of a beer bottle?
Yeah, there's some serious.
It is a good bit thicker.
It's a totally different color.
Imagine my surprise.
It kind of looks more like prune juice over there from afar.
Oh, it's a totally different color for sure. That
flavor?
Kind of. It's a little bit more intense than what I was having before, but it's not different. It's obviously the same thing.
Yeah, it's just
but
old.
It's not. But it's also not like creamy. Like a lot of Belgians will have that yeast food down at the bottom. Mm-hmm. It's chewy and it does actually kind of taste significantly different. Yeah, I feel this tastes pretty much the same. I'm on board with this. I'm going to drink whatever these weird worm things are.
Awesome.
Worm
mine's still looking good.
Yeah, I would drink this.
Wow. So I even make good bottom of bottle crud.
I mean, even the crap in the bottom's good. Nice work.
High fives all the way around.
crap at the bottom brewing.
What? How has nobody taken that name yet? Like, that's, let's see if crapatthebrewing.com, crapatthebottombrewing.com is taken real quick.
Yeah, sell that to the next person.
All unfiltered beers.
All unfiltered beers. That's what it is. This was not unfiltered. This is not something we were doing.
I went straight from bucket to siphon to bottle.
Andrew, what's it going to take for you to get started brewing again? Is it just like the heavens have to open up, or is it time? But
it's,
if it's
really
time, is it time that you have to make, or is it time that, you know, you have to just wait for to come? You know, just, you know, we're adults. We have other responsibilities.
That's really what it comes down to. I know it's a 4-hour thing, and so I tell myself I want to brew. I'm like, but I don't want to, because I haven't been doing it so consistently. I don't remember how fun it is.
Yeah, and it's like intimidating after you get away from it.
Yes, very much so.
Because of all the setup, all the breakdown, and then just being present for that amount of time. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, yeah, that's definitely true. But no, I would think that it would be. You're going to have to like reevaluate all of your equipment.
Yep.
Re-clean it.
Yep.
Re-sanitize it. And so it's almost like that. If you could just go, let's go and get some grain and get going. But I mean, it's like almost like a full refire on all of your equipment and just cleaning it and making sure everything works still. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Make sure the burners are still working and that all the electrical or whatever you've got going on is all. So you're talking about one day of your brewing day, the day before, you're going to have to sit there and redo, which is that's the kind of thing that would make me go, maybe next weekend. You know what I mean?
That's like that's really what's happening. That's it exactly. So,
all right, I'll be up in a couple of weeks.
Awesome.
Between now and then, I need you to go through, check all your stuff.
Let me take a note.
Clean it. Go ahead and get it all ready. Go ahead and get some ingredients, and I will sit and watch you brew for 4 hours. And then I will go inside while you clean it up.
Hold on.
Wait. I thought we were being friends here. There will be another collaboration brew, same as last time. I feel
we
like
we should do this again. We should.
I know. Or it doesn't even have to be anything this big. We should just brew something again, period. Even if it's one of the beers you've been working on over time.
To waste
time,
2 years doing nothing and then go back and do one of the most complex ones we ever did.
That may not be on our A game.
You might want to start back small.
That's kind of like running a Tybee Run Fest without training for it.
Well, maybe this is the year because you cleaned up
metal time.
You came home with all the bling, so I think you guys should go right in for the biggest American barley wine anyone's ever brewed.
Andrew, you've been less active on the old social media lately, but if people want to follow you on Twitter and Untappd and all that stuff, it is Brisk8.
Brisk8, yes.
Number 8. So Brisk like Nestea. Ooh, that's
exactly
Brisk.
Is. Yes.
Is that really what it comes from?
Yes.
Great.
It was sitting on my desk.
Stop it.
I kid you not.
There's not like some amazing story about...
That's it. I used to like Brisk tea. I like those commercials with the claymation dudes.
Stop it.
I'm dead serious. And so, I just was like, Brisk. And number 8, because Cal Ripken's king. And that's it.
Speaking of Cal Ripken, we didn't talk about the close of the Red Streak.
That is... You guys had it. I mean, you talked about it a couple episodes ago. That was it exactly. That is the day I'm shooting for.
What's the number? I mean, for those who don't truly idolize... Oh, I thought maybe you
I don't know
had it memorized.
I'm surprised you don't.
I mean, it's
24 or something, right?
No, I think it's 26 something. And this is great podcasting as long as we keep
it. So you're still like a year and a half away? Is that right?
I think it's... I want to say it's 2020, May of 2020, sometime in that frame, is when...
2,632.
Okay, 600. Yeah, that's a little bit longer.
A little bit longer. But I feel like that's totally doable, unless like there's some major like death.
I mean, I don't see him stopping then either. honestly.
You see him run as a ghost runner?
Yeah, I mean, death is not going to stop this run streak.
Yeah. All right.
That'd
but
be
I,
cool.
You are going to go one day longer, right?
Nope.
To just prove that Cal is just a little bitch.
Nope, I'm not. I want to get to that day and stop.
They say to destroy your heroes, like eat your heroes, like you gotta just push through it, like you gotta like just leave them in the dust.
So
you don't think Billy Ripken would have played that one extra game if he had a chance? Come on,
but that's the brother sibling rivalry. I'm not.
I can think about with Billy Ripken is that damn baseball bat.
Oh yeah.
The heel of the baseball bat, the Fleer 89 card.
Fleer 89, that was
Oh boy, that's my Billy Ripken.
I don't think I know this.
Yeah, shout it was a Trent. Baseball card that came out, and
he had written something.
Yeah,
he didn't. His teammates.
Oh, someone played a joke on him.
They did. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And is it not family?
It's not family friendly. It's F,
and it actually came out.
It's F face.
Yes. Like Topps didn't catch it.
It says F face on the. Let's think it was Fleer because it was the gray with the pinstripes.
Oh, so it just says F face.
No,
it says the whole thing.
It says the whole thing.
Oh man.
So yep.
So it's a collector's item. I'm sure they must have pulled that once they
realized
it.
They did. And the next version has a little white dot on the end of the bat.
It's like the hottest thing in eighth grade was to get that Billy Ripken card because it was fantastic.
That's bigger than the Honus Wagner card.
I'm concerned.
Everyone wants that one.
There's that, and there's the Goldenrod C-3PO card from that first Star Wars set where it looks like it's a giant gold dong.
What? Are you
That's
serious?
Totally worth checking out, by the way.
Okay.
Just search up
Google. I love gold dongs. Let's see what's going on with that.
I guess we have named this episode. Thank you, Keith. For what us and Brew Drink Run.
Why are you saying go check out that gold dong? I'm like, sounds like you. I don't know.
Go to brewdrinkrun.com. Follow us on Instagram, on Twitter, or on Facebook at brewdrinkrun. If you've got stuff that you want to share with us, please do so. You can call us. There's a phone number. Does anybody remember what the phone number is? There it is. 781-76-DRINK. This guy needs to be on every episode. 781-763-7465.
He's the only guy who listens to
all of them. Seriously. We've got Brew Drink Run t-shirts and technical running shirts. Mike says that they're soft. Available at our website. Click on the store link. Our theme music is provided by Morning Lights. Thanks for joining us, you guys. We will see you right back here next year at the Tights Crybaby Run Fest.
Two tickets to Pittsburgh, you guys.
Cheers, you guys.
Thank you.
These juice glasses.
Yeah, they're pretty
solid clinks. I'm a little afraid to drink like the big ones.
I can't believe you did what you did.
Go,
I can see
go,
them from
go,
here, and I'm
go,
across the
go.
Room.
I'm leaving those last worms. Yeah. It's like just straight up like, hey.
That was pretty impressive.
Okay. We did it, you guys.